Hello everyone, welcome back to Tantra's Mantra, where we go behind and beyond the tech news headlines. I'm your host Prakash Sangam, founder and principal at Tantra Analyst. As you all might know, Samsung announced its latest flagship smartphone, the Galaxy S25 series, on January 22nd at their yearly Unpacked event with all the pom-pom that we have come to know about them. I actually got a Galaxy S25 Ultra to review on the same day, almost 2 weeks before its general availability. I already published my review a few days ago. I'll include a link to that in the description of this podcast. Please do check that out. So Galaxy S5 has excellent specs and, of course, excellent performance. And most importantly, after all the hype, for the first time, I would say, Galaxy AI, the Gen AI, has some real usable features and use cases that, you know, many of us can benefit from. And of course, I'm sure as we move along, there'll be even more use cases and even higher utility of Gen AI. The excellent performance of S25 comes from its SoC, which is Qualcomm's Snapdragon 8 Elite. It's a first smartphone SoC based on the new Qualcomm custom core designs. As you may know, Qualcomm acquired a company called Nivea back in 2021, and it's using the designs from that company for its custom cores. And actually, Samsung uses a customized version of the Snapdragon 8 Elite, not off the shell. And this year, again, Samsung will use Qualcomm exclusively for all its models in all regions and markets for S25. That is, there are no Exynos versions this year. To discuss more about Snapdragon Elite platform, Qualcomm's collaboration with Samsung and Google, I have today with me Chris Patrick, SVP and GM of Handsets and Wearables at Qualcomm. Chris, congratulations on the Galaxy S25 launch and welcome to the show.
Okay, thank you, Prakash. Yeah, very happy to join you today.
Excellent. Chris, you spent almost 30 years at Qualcomm. Could you briefly tell us about your journey at the company?
Sure, that's right. Yeah, I've been at Qualcomm actually 28 years, so a pretty long time. Yeah. And so, started at the company as an engineer, worked on Globalstar, kind of had broader and broader engineering responsibilities as we kind of walked through the different Gs. Mm-hmm. I led our location technology teams here for most of a decade, mm-hmm. and I've led really many of our smartphone chipsets really through the smartphone evolution. So I led the chips that are the basis for the first Android devices. Uh-huh. Back then we had Windows and Brew and a whole host of operating systems through the kind of the birth and breadth of Android. Yeah. Again, on the engineering side, I led the first 8 chipset ever, the first chipset we called Snapdragon, the first chipset we called Snapdragon 8. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and then for the last few years, I've moved on to the business side, really guiding the roadmap, working with our customers to kind of realize the shared vision for the products together. So at this point, I'm responsible for the business on the smartphone side, as well as this collection of devices that complement the smartphone, you know, the wearables, so earbuds, as well as a watch.
Perfect. As I mentioned, Snapdragon 8 Elite is the first smartphone SoC based on your custom cores, based on New Year designs that came with the acquisition. How much work did you have to do to port all of your software, which was primarily on ARM cores before, right, to this custom core? Was it a lot of new code that had to be written and so on?
Sure. Yeah, I think as you point out, this is a fully custom core, mm-hmm. right? So it's an ARM instruction set, kind of compatible. But in fact, the microarchitecture of the core, Exodon, is kind of uniquely designed at Qualcomm. This is actually our second generation. Uh-huh. Our first was released on the compute side last year, and then it's our second generation on the handset side. Mm-hmm. Now you first use on the handset side. Mm-hmm. So the instruction set is the same. So a lot of the tools, et cetera, are leveraged between the two. What I would say is from a system point of view, mm-hmm. Very different from, for example, the cores we used on the generation before, mm-hmm. like very different power and performance. Mm-hmm. This is also octa-core, but now, we think of it as kind of two very powerful CPUs, mm-hmm. and then cores, and then 6 very powerful cores in themselves. Uh-huh. So how we use that collection of cores, actually very different from how we use those cores on the 8, Gen 3, the previous year. Mm-hmm. So as we move to this 8 Elite tier, really now we believe this is a, you know, this is the fastest CPU in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So then how we put that whole system together is different. The underlying, finally, instruction set, very similar, but really the system design, very different.
Okay, and it's a lot of work moving to this from the previous generation then, previous ARM core.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as always, each of these premium tier designs, these eight designs, especially this one, the 8 Elite, is the work of an army. You know, at one point we did an estimate and concluded there's something like 10,000 engineers that touch each of these premium flagship devices from Qualcomm. Some inside Qualcomm, some at our customers, some at ISVs and partners. But it really takes an army to put together. What in each case, each of these is sort of a little technical miracle, really, is one of these premium devices from Qualcomm.
Of course, yeah. And as I mentioned, it is a customized version for Samsung specifically. How different is it from the off-the-shelf 8 Elite?
Sure. Okay, we've been partnering with Samsung for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Right. So of those 28 years, I think most of those 28 years, I was working on a product with Samsung. Not everyone, but a lot of them.
Uh-huh.
So so we have actually very close collaboration on a lot of different kind of technology streams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how we do camera, working with those guys, how we kind of do the best we can do on the display,
mm-hmm.
how we do scheduling, how really the effort can we can work together very closely.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, the 8 Elite, for Galaxy,
mm-hmm.
We looked at several different focus areas. So mm-hmm. I can't share everything we did together, but a few of the things we did together.
Mm-hmm.
One, they want to have for their users the best possible experience on gaming, the best possible experience on kind of fluidity of the UI and mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked with them on CPU and GPU optimizations.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is, they will see, Galaxy S for Elite users
mm-hmm.
will see a different level of kind of peak, especially performance on the CPU and GPU.
Mm-hmm.
But even more than that, even kind of more broadly than that, in this case, we worked on really some really co-designing more closely with their device.
Uh-huh.
So as you look at that Galaxy S device, Samsung considers it, the goal was rather than we design the perfect 8 Elite and then they take it and design the perfect Galaxy S device, mm-hmm. instead we wanted to think of that as a single system.
Uh-huh.
And then what changes could we make, what changes could they make to make these two work better together? So the Samsung experts really looked at a couple of things on display.
I see.
So one of them is they wanted a particular look and feel for what's called upscaling.
Mm-hmm.
So that means kind of as you constructing kind of the image to send to the display,
yeah.
depending on the modes, sometimes you have a lower resolution and you want to upscale it
yeah.
to get the full impact on that display.
Yeah.
So Samsung had a particular design they had in mind for a particular look and feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so we worked with them to implement kind of their vision for that.
Yes.
And that's what they call the ProScaler. So
yeah.
they announced that at the launch event.
Okay.
So that's using AI to again, take these kind of smaller resolution display images and upscale it to the exact right look and feel on that Samsung display. Another one is they have a block which they described as MDNIE
mm-hmm.
block.
Mm-hmm.
So this has a lot of different functions, but in particular, really it's co-designed with the Samsung display
mm-hmm.
that they use in the Galaxy S.
Oh, I see.
So one of the features there is a specific type of memory compression, of data compression. So that's now custom data compression on the SoC that's mirrored then on the display.
Oh.
So the two of these work together to reduce power consumption so you can get incredible resolution on the display without paying a penalty in terms of power. Anyway, so it's just a couple examples of things we did together with Samsung.
Perfect.
Again, they're very focused on kind of the end user experience and making sure the Galaxy S look and feel is delivered to their customers with the best power consumption, the best kind of quality of service, the best fluidity on the display. And so, so we worked together really to engineer the 8 Elite really for that Galaxy platform. And hence the name, 8 Elite for Galaxy.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I'm sure there are both software and hardware elements in this customization.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but in software, I think it goes well beyond what we just talked about.
Yeah.
We worked, for example, together on, they described Nightography,
mm-hmm.
right, which is Samsung's brand name initiative for developing incredible video capture,
mm-hmm.
right? So a camcorder
mm-hmm.
In very difficult lighting conditions.
Yeah.
So one of the things we worked with them on was something called a temporal filtering, which is a way to sort of combine multiple frames, even in very difficult conditions, to kind of extract the right image, even for video. Yeah. So it's something we're used to on stills, but on video as well. Now we're able to do that working with them. So again, that is a sort of a system function. Mm-hmm. You'd say a software function, but kind of a system function worked on with them.
Oh, I see.
Certainly on AI, you know, obviously they, for good reason, they heavily emphasized AI in this launch event. And so AI is a place we worked very closely to do things that are really unique to kind of Samsung, certainly that are unique to kind of the Samsung, Google, Qualcomm collaboration.
Excellent. So you talked about the co-working or co-development. So is the IP developed for this customization? Is it fully yours? Is it shared between you and Samsung?
So the answer is it sort of depends. Mm-hmm. I mean, at times we're working together on something that is cutting edge, and we're both kind of helping lead the industry. Mm-hmm. And then that's things that are they're not necessarily proprietary to one customer.
No.
But yeah, but other times, for example, this MDNIE block or the ProScaler block really are kind of an extension of Samsung's kind of design and their concept. So those will be continue to be unique to Samsung.
Yeah, that means then some of this right now it is exclusive, but in later chipsets or later versions, you could bring that learning to the off-the-shelf chipset as well, right? Or is it just co-work with them? It is will be with them, but anything that you own, you are thinking of bringing that to your roadmap as well? Or
yeah, I think the answer is it depends. I mean, sometimes, again, as I said, sometimes Samsung and we and us together lead something new. Like, for example, you know, one of the first launches of 5G, millimeter wave 5G, was us collaborating with Samsung, right? But that's obviously something that's not unique to Samsung. But some of these specific elements I described, like the ProScaler and MDNIE, absolutely Samsung owns that. And so Samsung would that continue to be exclusive to Samsung.
Okay, perfect. And then, I know, obviously, a phone like S25 requires a lot of collaboration between you guys, Samsung, and Google, right? But specifically, how much of that collaboration was between you guys and Samsung versus you guys and Google and all three together?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's it's complicated is the answer. Even, you know, Samsung described Gemini.
Mm-hmm.
So Gemini means a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Right. Gemini kind of refers to the assistant service, which is partly cloud, though it relies on some things on the device.
Yeah.
It sort of is also a brand name that encompasses the underlying model, which is the Nano model, which can be on the cloud or can be running on device.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's complicated. Even to kind of describe this quickly is complicated. But the short version is all three parties and every combination have to work very closely together.
Okay.
So we work very closely with Google on as we conceive of Nano, as we see how sort of Android itself evolves, how it could be done, what's the right framework, what's the right runtime, you know, how do we build this system really for Android to do on device AI.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty heavy collaboration between kind of us and Google. But then Samsung has Samsung obviously then works with Google using those models and even some of those services, even the cloud framework.
Yeah.
But then Samsung has its own technology initiatives that in fact will be different underlying models, different use cases, different services, different integration into their applications.
Mm-hmm.
They will work directly with Samsung on optimizing their models, getting the quantization right, getting the compression right, how it fits into this overall framework.
Yeah.
So yeah, so basically every combination of all three. So the answer is yes. Every combination of us have to work very closely together to do something like the Galaxy S25.
Yeah, good. So I mean, you brought up an excellent point on Galaxy AI, right? So I mean, it is a kind of a hybrid Gen AI model, right? Although I would think a lot of Gemini, a lot of that works on the cloud, but they also have a Gemini Nano on the device that runs on your NPU, and I'm assuming you had to do quantization and other optimizations to run those models on the device and, you know, seamlessly move between these two and such. And also they had to work with Samsung's own on-device AI models as well, right? So what is the key to making this all work seamlessly, because these are different components running at different parts, but from a user experience point of view, it has to be, you know, very transparent and seamless. So any views on how you did that kind of a thing?
Yeah, no, that you're identifying a big challenge for the industry, and one that I think Google in particular is doing a great job on managing, is providing for many kinds of applications, many kinds of services. They've actually done a lot of good work on what we call here hybrid AI, right? Which is the capability to have on cloud, you know, large, often very heavy, and maybe expensive in some ways, versions of a model, and then scaling down with a consistent sort of API, a consistent look and feel to the lighter, more efficient models that are running on device. So you want to be able to dynamically, even but sometimes depending on the application, depending on the complexity of the query, route that either to on device or route it to the cloud. So itself, this is a major field of study for the whole industry. Hybrid AI, how do we make this process seamless? Not optimizing kind of just for a single modality, but the multi-modality. Okay, so anyway, so certainly very complicated. We do a lot there. Samsung has their own concept of how they want to do that scaling. Google's done a lot of incredible work. But in the end, you know, when we want to run that model on device, that's when really Qualcomm shines, right? Because this is really what we do, is how do we do incredibly complicated things in very small form factors with very efficient kind of power levels. So that's what we focus on, is how do we take these models and then optimize them in a number of different ways. You mentioned quantization, but quantization and compression and a variety of different techniques to squeeze the performance out of credible SoC, but still much smaller, obviously, than the resources on the cloud.
Okay. And once a workflow starts, right, AI workflow, it's Google which will decide where to run that specific part of the workflow, right, either on the cloud or the device. So can you walk me through how that process works? Samsung's own models, which are 100% on device, anything that is running on the device, make sure it doesn't send any data outside the device. So how that mechanism is working? So it's Google which is deciding how to do it, I'm assuming.
Okay, yeah, you raised a lot of good questions. So I certainly don't have an answer to every question on how Google is running some of those decisions and the logic, and how Samsung is implementing it necessarily either. But I think some considerations. You know, certainly the right now the Gemini Assistant, right, as you described, Gemini Live, I think is first cloud-based as it stands now.
Okay.
But even that is not simple.
Okay.
Because in fact, you know, you start off by speaking to Gemini Live on your phone often, right? And so that actually has a whole process that is actually, again, AI-based that runs on Qualcomm Silicon to recognize you're invoking and speaking to Gemini Live, right? There's initial stage of kind of waking up and recognizing this is happening. There's initial voice processing that's happening on device that is AI that's running on our silicon. Then in the end, that's synthesized into some set of tokens, some sort of content that's then shipped to, I believe, to Gemini Live processing on the cloud. They then have to process it, make a decision, but then the actions in the end may be back on device. Anyway, so it's a complicated kind of system design here that really requires the device and the cloud to work, very closely together. And I think we'll see that continuing to evolve as we take advantage of more and more of the local resources on device to get you better latency and overall more cost-efficient scheme. So anyway, so that's evolving. I think Samsung then has their own process. So depending on application, whether they want to route it to cloud versus device. So there's some applications that they described even at their launch event, right, that explicitly and exclusively are done on device. So for example, they talked about semantic photo search, right, that I want to be able to describe, please find me the photo with the dog and the cake, but not the one with the red sweater or something, right? I really want to go search my device and my content because maybe I have sensitive content that I don't necessarily want to upload to the cloud and have somebody else do the processing. Anyway, so there's going to be these applications that are specifically device-based and then applications that are hybrid. And that's continuing to evolve. A unified framework for that versus kind of an application-specific framework. But yeah, a fascinating area to watch.
Okay. And I'm assuming specifically GenAI-related work that you had done with Google, that is transferable to other phones as well, right? With other OEMs, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Google's been public about their plans on Gemini. Really is to be a broad ecosystem play. But I think that which we agree with, which is the strength of this Android ecosystem is in its diversity, and so we need to bring other vendors along, and not just a single one. But certainly Samsung is kind of the pioneer here.
Yeah.
But I think you should expect to see some of these Gemini-based services and Gemini-based enablement spread to other devices in the ecosystem.
So when you work with other OEMs, I'm assuming you take this learning or the development and other things that you've done here and take to other OEMs as well, right? In the sense, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You might have to do some customization for that OEM, but a lot of the work can be leveraged.
I think that's a fair summary for the sort of the sort of Google-centric Android enablement piece.
Yeah.
Right. Like I think again, the way Google thinks of it is Gemini in some sense is a core feature of Android.
Yeah.
So that definitely propagates. But some things that Samsung is doing specifically, mm-hmm. you know, that are unique to their device, unique to their ecosystem, mm-hmm. those would stay Samsung.
Yeah. And did you do anything specific for running Galaxy models on the device, because they run mostly on the NPU, right? So
absolutely. Yeah, in fact, with certainly with Samsung, but really with every one of our customers,
uh-huh.
I think everybody has a strong collaboration with Google,
mm-hmm.
but they also have their own use cases, their own technology independently they want to bring, sometimes mm-hmm. in collaboration with Google mm-hmm. and sometimes on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that diversity of different approaches is what makes Android, you know, special.
Correct. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so we work very closely with each OEM and then with different technology vendors in the industry
mm-hmm.
To do unique things on AI,
mm-hmm.
really beyond just the models that Google provides.
Cool. And a lot of this work kind of transcends beyond the specific chipsets or the specific models, right? And that sets you well. You don't have to start afresh for every new cycle. And in terms of AI, we are at a very early stage, right? So it's building on what you have done rather than starting afresh, isn't it?
That's right. You know, actually, just today, just before this this conversation,
uh-huh.
you know, I met with some of our AI experts.
Yeah.
And we talked about just the tremendous demand in terms of different models local to different regions, different ecosystems, and the tremendous backlog of pent-up demand, really,
yeah.
to run different models on the silicon. So it's something that's hugely important for us is that, you know, we're building these systems, but with a heavy emphasis on kind of coming up with the right system design. So there's compatibility across SoCs, compatibility, in fact, even across business segments for us.
Yeah.
So we want to provide this horizontal solution so you can quickly move technology, you know, from a phone to the PC, from the PC to the watch, from the watch to a car even. And so that's our focus here is how do we build really an AI platform that helps the whole ecosystem move forward.
Correct. Especially, you know, there are at least a couple of new models every day, right? So
that's right.
Yeah,
that's
right. You got to make sure your platform below has to be so flexible that you don't have to keep changing and optimizing all the time when you get new one. There might be some optimization needed, but the idea should be that most of it can be used right off. You make small corrections to run these new models.
That's right. I think it takes a lot of work to make things seem simple.
Yeah.
Right. But that's exactly what we're trying to do, is to make this as easy as possible for our customers, easy as possible for application developers.
Yeah.
You know, so people can innovate on technology versus spending too much time stuck in sort of implementation and optimization. So we want to absorb some of that within our system and try to make it as simple as possible for really the technology to spread as quickly as possible.
Excellent. And then this customization you had done a few times with Samsung. And also, I remember long back, you did some co-development on camera, I think, with Vivo. Going forward, how common you think this customization will be? I mean, for example, will you do this with other OEM? Another large OEM comes to you and wants to have a customized chip for themselves. Will you entertain that? Or, you know, if so, what are the decision criteria for you guys?
Yeah, you know, we have an incredible set of customers across the globe, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just virtually everybody, anybody that makes, you know, a premium tier device, yeah. You know, virtually, and certainly in the Android ecosystem, works with Qualcomm.
Yeah.
And so, so I think we have pretty deep collaborations really across the industry.
Mm-hmm.
There is some concentration in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So as you say, that many of the OEMs are very large OEMs.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's definitely an activity.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say more often it's done at the system level
uh-huh.
and not done in this way, kind of all the way down to the bare metal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this is something that's pretty rare for us.
Yeah.
We've only done it really a handful of times in our history.
Yeah.
And so far it's been close to unique at this level of customization for Samsung. But we'll see. Maybe that evolves over time.
Okay, because I mean, overall, the trend is to have customized silicon, right? The workflows are a little bit different or changing, and OEMs think because of the scale that they have, you know, it's better to have a silicon that is perfectly customized for that, for example, right? So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think a lot of it, you know, we can not absorb, but we can meet the opportunity, mm-hmm. you know, using kind of system level optimizations. Because yeah, what we built is a platform, yeah. and it's deliberately, that's something, again, unique for Qualcomm, is we've always had to think about not one design point, but multiple design points. Yeah. Right, as we look at everybody across the industry that wants to use our technology in different ways. Mm-hmm. So by definition, we've always thought about in this kind of horizontal way. How do we capture a variety of different kind of concepts within a single platform? Mm-hmm. So usually we're able to do that is provide our customers the opportunity to do something unique mm-hmm. while still capturing that on a single platform. But anyway, we'll see how it evolves, and we're always open to new models.
Yeah, sure. So now moving to the evolution of the SoCs a little bit, you know, there'll always be need for thinner, smaller, and lighter smartphones, right? I mean, even Samsung announced this Galaxy S25 Edge, and there are rumors about iPhone Slim and so on. So, you know, without revealing too much about product information, of course, what are some of the things that you might be looking at to achieve that directionally? So is it, you'll reduce the number of cores, smaller, the vapor chamber and other things that you talked about in S25, smaller or remove it totally? You know, is it more of a trade-off between the performance and size and weight and so on? So want to pick your brain on how you want to achieve those, right? Especially with folds and multi-folds coming in, and there'll always be a huge demand to make these thinner, smaller, and lighter.
Sure, sure. You know, it's definitely a trend. I think, or there's definitely energy in this direction. Yeah. Let's say that in the industry. Yeah. And again, it's fascinating. I think how these emerge, right? Yeah. Just from kind of small phones to big phones, thin phones, yeah. Foldable phones, just incredible kind of variety and energy in the handset industry. So this one's exciting. Yeah. I think we've seen certainly this Edge device. Mm-hmm. We know some of the customers in China very aggressive on form factors, yeah. right? Yeah. In particular, these very thin foldables. Yeah. I think started some of the energy in this direction.
Correct. Yeah.
And obviously, in the end, there will be a trade-off, right? Yeah. With less volume, yeah. You'll have to make some trade-offs on battery size or I/O, mm-hmm. Kind of as you described. Mm-hmm. In general, you know, this is most of the work that you know we do is already kind of in this direction, mm-hmm. right? How do we get power consumption to be as low as possible? How do we get the most flexible kind of solutions in terms of thermal management, yep. et cetera. Yep. It's, you know, I could share with you, I won't share the details, but yep. there's incredible efforts that go on by Qualcomm and other partners to shave off even tiny, tiny, tiny fractions mm-hmm. of a millimeter, yep. right, from the thickness of our products. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's an area of kind of intense focus from us and from really our competitors as well, is how do we make these devices, despite the incredible capabilities, really, really small and very efficient at distributing kind of heat, so they can work even in these incredibly thin form factors.
Yeah, so I mean, related to this topic, let me give my pet peeve. You know, mm-hmm. you spend so much energy, money, and talent on shaving off this millimeters from the thickness, and then you make the phone so slippery that you have to put on a thick case on it. So, okay. I mean, I've been talking to all the OEMs, why don't you put some texture on the side so that I don't have to put a, you know, case on it. That kind of shears off multiple millimeter from the thickness of the phone, right? So, but yeah, just keeping that aside.
I understand. I understand. Yeah, that is not one of the features of the chipset, yeah. but I understand.
Yeah,
yeah. I have the same frustration at times. It's a beautiful device, but a little too slippery still. So it's understood. Sure.
Okay. So in terms of the evolution of NPU, right, has come quite a long way. Do you think the current generation, 40 up to 45 NPU tops, is that good enough or even more than what you need for the basic Gen AI workloads that are being run now, or maybe even till end of this year, or the life cycle of this phone, which is a couple of years? Or where are we in this in this NPU performance increase curve, you think?
Sure. You know, TOPS is an interesting measure. I mean, TOPS measures a kind of a single aspect of raw compute.
Yeah.
So let's say, yeah, just that sort of raw compute.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can still do more.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of other aspects to it. I think as we look at, you know, things like stable diffusion, as we look at the kind of the raw operations that are part of doing a full kind of agentic assistant, for example, as we look at kind of thing to do image manipulation even more quickly. You know, one of the things we talked about is, you know, quantization, all these techniques we use to try to get these models to work in a phone.
Yeah.
But in fact, you know, there's a whole host of other techniques we'll wrap around that now to make it even more efficient, even more responsive in phones. So, yeah, so I think we're definitely not at the saturation point where we sort of have enough because really the, you know, what people want from AI, their expectations for AI, I think is rising maybe even faster than we're investing in hardware acceleration, investing in kind of silicon. You know, it's, I think people's expectations are rising very quickly as they all interact with this and they realize what it can do in their lives and they want more and they want more and they want more. So, yeah, I think especially at the flagship tier, I think we, you know, we know we're going to continue to invest here to make make AI more pervasive, more responsive, lower power, so you can use it even more. So that's our focus.
I see. And, you know, distilling that to the lower tiers, right now, I think, you know, there is no tiering in AI performance between these tiers, right, of the phones, flagship to premium to, you know, non-premium and others.
On the handset side, we definitely do have tiering. So certainly the 8 elite tier versus the 8 versus our traditional 7 and so on, each do step down in terms of their AI capability.
Okay.
So I think we can do similar types of operations, but we're aware maybe on the premium tier. You're running a very large complex model, maybe the model size steps down, so the model kind of complexity and sophistication steps down, or perhaps the throughput decreases. So for example, you want to use an AI model to summarize all your email, maybe the response time is a little bit higher as you move down.
So
different certainly different designs for the different tiers.
I see. That's what I was thinking. So going forward, obviously AI, since it's one of the defining characters of the device, it has the performance of that has to tier, right? So that who's buying premium expects a premium service. So and how that tiering might look like. So you're saying it's not so much what you can do, but more on how quickly, how easily you can do these things. Like you might have similar functions between the tiers for AI use cases.
That's right. And I think even OEMs, the handset vendors and so on are all themselves, I think, evaluating how do they want to tier their AI capabilities. So for example, you know, the most, some of the most elaborate AI models at the premium tier, the flagship tier, might consume 4 gigabytes of memory, for example. But then as you move down to kind of lower, as you move down the tiering on the phones, memory size tends to reduce. Right. So so I think we have to kind of design for a different set point. The OEMs are constructing their phones for different set points in terms of AI capabilities.
Yeah. So you talked about, you know, new models coming up almost every day now, right? I mean, DeepSeek R1 started a storm in the tech industry, right?
That's right.
And it is interesting that it is, you know, we're moving from this power guzzling models like OpenAI, Google and Meta to more nimble, more power sipping kind of models, right? So I think that kind of bodes very well for you guys, where you've been talking about on-device AI, moving from cloud to device, the edge, and so on. I think these models are an extremely good sign for what you've been talking, like, what, 2-3 years now in terms of edge AI?
Right. You know, as we look at this, I think there's a lot happening in the industry. I mean, it's amazing. The AI industry just extraordinary, right? I think, for, you know, this company to very quickly go to the top of every headline, just amazing. But yeah, as a trend, I think what we see is really the power of distillation, the power of multiple kind of models working together with mixture of experts. You know, we see a lot of energy, I think, in the industry that show, there are different approaches, I think, that could be complementary. So, you know, big monolithic, gigantic models that can only run on very large pieces of hardware versus, you know, denser, kind of smaller models, collections of models that can run on the edge. You know, we see, this diversity, I think, is positive. That's definitely what we've always expected. You know, I think we've shared, right, just if you look at small models today, or small meaning very large, but still not not the incredibly large kind of cloud models. But if you look at a medium-sized model today versus, you know, a large model from 12 months ago, you see the same performance, right? So we know as all this innovation happens and new techniques emerge, you know, new disruptive approaches emerge, it's going to continue to make, you know, models that run on the edge more and more valuable, and they're going to meet the demand that consumers have. And then you get all the benefits that you get from edge, which is, you know, this distributed compute. You already have this supercomputer in your pocket. So that's definitely going to help. If you want to manage your content and keep it on device, again, having that edge capability is going to be positive for you. If you want instantaneous response because you want low latency, again, you have now a model on the edge that can run and produce those experiences locally. So anyway, so we think it's very exciting, and it's a great direction for the industry, and it's great for Snapdragon.
Excellent, Chris. That was my last question. Thank you very much for all the insights.
Okay, thank you. Great talking to you, Prakash. Always good to see you.
Yeah, congrats again on the S25 launch, and I look forward to other launches of Snapdragon 8 Elite coming this year.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. Yeah, we're very excited, and there's more coming down the pipe, so looking forward to talking to you again. Thank you.
Thank you again for coming over to Tantra's Mantra. So folks, that's all we have for now. Hope you found this discussion informative and useful. If so, please hit like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening this on. I'll be back soon with another episode, putting light on another interesting tech subject. Don't forget to check out my Galaxy S25 Ultra review. Bye-bye for now.